is saying that Buddha made himself invisible. As sutras always to be taken literally.
Yes, the words of the sutta saying that he did that. And there's other instances where he, early on in his teaching career, he did that kind of thing a few times. But it seems after a few years, he realized that when he, and not just turning invisible or that kind of thing, he noticed or realized that if he performed those kind of psychic feats, then everyone focused on the fact that he and the Sangha were flying through the air, or they could disappear and become invisible or such like, and they would ignore the teachings because they're so kind of giddy over the marvelous psychic performance. And so it seems that after a few years, it's difficult to say how long, but it seems like 2 or 3 years maybe, a few years after the Buddha's enlightenment, only in cases of emergency, he made a public demonstration of that kind of thing. But early on, there's quite a few things like that. For example, when Yasa, who was a young man who'd had a kind of rude awakening in a party and had been sort of disgusted by all of his friends and companions sort of lying around half drunk, snoring and dribbling and drooling, leaves the party and goes off and then comes across the Buddha meditating out in the park and then sits down, receives a teaching and becomes a stream enterer. Seemingly, well, he hasn't completely got over the effects of the party, which is an interesting item. And then his dad comes along looking for him. And then the Buddha conceals Yasa, makes Yasa invisible. And so he has a conversation with the dad until the father becomes a stream enterer, and then he lets Yasa be made visible again. According to the stories, it was the sort of thing that a fully enlightened Buddha can quite comfortably do. Maybe so. I don't find it difficult to give credence to that kind of thing. And, you know, being up in a Brahma world, on that score, that in itself is pretty remarkable, going up to the high heavenly realms and having conversations with beings up there. That in itself is a pretty remarkable scenario. And it's interesting that the reason why he went to visit was because he realized through his meditation that this Brahma god Baka had formed a conceited view, thought he was the creator of the universe, the most supreme being and creator of all beings and the most powerful deity. And Baka had been a teacher of the Buddha in a previous lifetime. And so it was this sense that, oh, my former teacher is now deluded. He's in this Brahma world, but he's in this deluded state. I wonder if I can go and help him to be free from that delusion. So it was an act of compassion to go and help his former teacher be freed from a conceited view. That was the motivation for him to go up to that Brahma world. Also, in Indian folklore, Baka means heron, and in Indian folklore, the heron is always a kind of proud, sort of snooty, got that image in Indian folktales. So it's a kind of, having a Brahma god called heron is a sort of jibe at the Brahmins, seemingly. Venerable Ananda Maitreya pointed that out, that it's echoing that sort of vain and conceited quality that was there, just happens to have the name heron.